Today is November 18th, 2018. This is Candy Wiggum, and I am interviewing Ken Rizzi, who was a Peace Corps volunteer in Botswana from 1986 to 1988 as a drought relief officer. Also with me is Christy Musa, president of the Return Peace Corps Volunteers of New Jersey, who will be observing. All right. The first question we generally ask is, why did you join Peace Corps?
Well, I always wanted to, ever since I was a kid, I always wanted to serve my country, and I felt that this was a great way to do it. That was my intent was always to go into the Peace Corps. I was not a college-bound kid, and the Peace Corps actually, you know, made me go to college and get my bachelor's degree.
Oh,
so I was
great.
Going to be eligible for the Peace Corps.
Yeah. And how did your parents feel about it?
Well, they were supportive. Yeah, very, very much so. Don't bring home any surprises. My father's... So I'm the youngest of eight. And my parents were older at the time. So I don't think my father would... He wasn't not supportive, but he was... Had an old mindset. You're going to Africa and, you know... Just don't come home with any surprises. And he was from the World War II generation.
Yeah. So. What kind of background did you have that ended up as a drought relief officer?
So I went to college for business. And I also had experiences doing electrical work. So the first placement was going to be in the Philippines. And that's when the Marcoses were in... power, and when we were just about going to training, there was a coup there, so my placement got squashed, and so I had to wait another couple months, and this position in Botswana came up as a drought relief officer. So the position of a drought relief officer is to manage a project not unlike the Civilian Conservation Corps we had in the Depression, where since there was a very severe drought at the time, the government put farmers to work building civil projects. Really great program. And my job was to manage that program. So I had several villages. Every village got one project. I had a staff of 23 people. Some of them were truck drivers to deliver the equipment, and some of them were accountants that paid the folks. Once a month, I would go on a 10-day trip to go inspect the projects. So
yeah.
it was an administrative job, but also it's like a civil engineering project, which I never had any experience with, but sort of building like a guest house, pit latrines, series of pit latrines, different kinds of, wells we built, different projects like that. So it was really...
And you must have been fairly young at the time, and I imagine people who worked for you were older. Was that...
That's correct.
Yeah, how was that
so
for you?
I never thought of it. I never thought of it as being an issue or a problem. We were equals, right? So we were just, I was, that sort of my management style is that sort of I'm a team player, and I would really just get my hands dirty also. So every Friday I would have what I would call a slingshot session. I would sit in one spot and have my staff sit in a arc. We'd get a soda because we were able to get a soda, and I would say, what's the problem? You know, what are the problems? Let's try to fix the whatever the issues are. Am I managing okay? Is everything going fine? How can we improve it? Those sorts of things. So I never thought of age. I guess the truck drivers were probably in their 40s,
mm-hmm.
but the accounting staff were educated. And basically they were just going to pay. So they had a load of cash on them and they would pay. But I think they were probably educated. I don't think college, but at least they had a high school education. So they were probably maybe a hair younger than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 24, 23, 24, and they were probably in their 20s, early 20s. So I never thought of that. Yeah.
How was the application process for you? How long did it take between the time you applied and the time you found out your assignment. Sounds like you had to wait then another couple of months.
Yeah, so I graduated college and immediately applied. So graduated in June, had to wait until September to get the Philippines placement. And then I had to wait till I think October. Yeah, October before the Botswana placement. So it was a short time. That time was stressful because your life is sort of in limbo. I was working. I did get a job. And, you know, although I was living at home, I had a car. So I had to sell. I was selling the car. I didn't have a car then. Once I knew I was going. And then so I didn't have a car. It was only for like, you know, 6 weeks or so. But, and then you really, you're not thinking about career advancement at home. Right? So, I think I was, you know, I was working at an electrical warehouse, you know, as a management trainee or something like that, so.
What kind of clearances did you have to get back then? Like medical, legal?
Oh, we had to get the yellow fever, you know, and do the, you know, physical, and we had this, I don't know if you guys had this, but we had this intensive 3-day weekend where we went to the Harper's Ferry. I guess it was they were telling us that this is how the CIA trains or the FBI trains people. It was psychological torture for like 48, 72 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just all these scenarios they put you through, and they try to, you know, really put you in a lot of stress about how, you know, you'd be able to handle this. A lot of people dropped out. I mean, not a lot, I'd say, but a couple of people didn't get the right to go to the Peace Corps after that weekend. So I did not expect. I was drained by the end of the weekend. So,
what's a scenario? Can you remember one?
Role playing.
Can you remember what it was?
I can tell you one thing where they put me in a room, and they said, "Okay, tell us the real you, or tell us, tell us what you have, or tell us, you know, what's wrong with you." And then there was no, and then we would sit, I said, "There's nothing wrong with me." You know, they just wanted to really just try to push your buttons, and, you know, it was just a roaring silence in the room. And it was really, really uncomfortable, right? So I'm trying to figure out what they wanted. And I guess they wanted to sort of break you and say, okay, you know, what are your ulterior motives for doing this or something like that? I really never got to know what the bottom line was. I guess they were looking for mental strength, you know, a little bit of mental stability and strength, you know. So it was draining. Mm. I mean, maybe I'm making it out to be more than it was, but, you know, we're all drained.
Yeah.
Beautiful place, though. Harper's Ferry.
Now, you found out first about the Philippines, and then that dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And then you found out about Botswana. What kind of training did you have? Did you have some before you left?
Yeah.
Was most of your training in-country? What was your training like?
So it was all in the country, 3 months. Wait a minute, maybe not 3 months. Yeah, I think it was like 3 months, where we had intensive language training. We lived with a family, didn't speak English, and every day we would go, get various sorts of training, cultural, I think it was 4 hours a day in language, role-playing, I think we did some role-playing, like cultural role-playing, and I don't know, the days just flew by, but I believe it was mostly language,
yeah,
you know, mostly language, and then we had to live with the family who wasn't going to speak, they weren't speaking English, so. And we were living in huts, so it was really just fascinating. That cultural immersion was just absolutely, you know,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, can you say more about that? What was your family like? What did,
I was,
how was
so
that?
So we lived in a rondavel, which is just a thatched hut, right, with the grass roof. And I was really lucky because the house that I stayed in, there was actually a bed, and the woman's son was overseas. He was in the Netherlands studying, so I was able to use his bed. But across from me, she would sleep on the floor with probably like 8 or 9 kids, and it would look like they would all lay on their backs, and they're all in a row. So it was really wonderful to see that. And of course, chickens in the house too. And so it was pretty amazing. And you know, the pet latrine out back. Fantastic experience with the being immersed in that.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of getting blown away by that. It was a lot of fun.
And then what happened once you went to site? How did you live it on site? And
so,
was it a city? Was it a village?
So it was a village, Kasani, up on the border of Zambia and Zimbabwe. Four countries meet there in Namibia, so on the Zambezi River. And I have to say, probably out of all the volunteers that have happened, my experience is probably in the top 100. I had such a great Peace Corps experience. So went to Kasani, which again is right on the border of Zambia. And the people were very, very nice. We went ahead and started the project. I was relieving someone, so the project was established already. We had a fleet of trucks and projects, and I would go around, like I said, once a month. And they would go to the chief and say, what would you like your project to be? And we'd have a meeting at what they call a kotla, where half the town would come out and then decide on what the project was going to be. It was really great. And they picked their project. We gave them their, over time, of course, we would deliver the materials. And then I would just go revisit that once a week or once a month. I would go back and see how they're progressing. Hardworking people, really nice to see that. So on the weekends, and of course, I didn't tell you this, is that both of the towns I lived in were immersed in the national parks. So I was able to traverse and be in the national parks most of my 2 years there, which is just, really fantastic. Living in Kasani, so I would hitchhike on Saturdays to Zimbabwe, which is where Victoria Falls, the town of Victoria Falls, and I would get my lettuce and my a few vegetables, and then hitchhike back. And I understand now that this town of Kasani is really built up, just like the other town that I was in. So I was in Kasani for 6 months. And then I wanted to transfer because I knew most of my friends were going to be in Maun, so I transferred to a town called Maun. That's where I spent a year and a half, and that's when I had 75 villages, and I worked with the Basari people, the Bushmen, and the people who speak with the cliques and stuff. So I really had a great experience with them. Same thing, going around to the villages, sleeping out. There's nowhere to sleep. You're sleeping on the ground, in the tent, a mosquito net. And then visiting the projects in the daytime, seeing how they're progressing, dealing with the issues and problems. And that's why my experience was, fantastic.
What language did you use?
Setswana. Yeah.
And you got relatively fluent in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like one of the highest scores. Because I wasn't a school teacher, so the school teacher was speaking English.
Mm-hmm.
English is the official language, but I was with the more local folks.
Yeah.
And the adults. So I didn't have an experience with children. I had experience with adults. It was a little bit unusual, I would think.
Yeah.
In a young country like that. So.
What was the hardest thing about your Peace Corps experience? What were your biggest or some of your biggest challenges?
Potential corruption. So I had a person that shared an office with me was sort of the person who would, the native speaker. And although I was the technical officer, this person was the liaison to the villages and also to see if the projects were going okay or whatnot. So they would always, although I was in charge of the trucks and the staff. And so this person, and several times, not only this person, but several people would want to load up the trucks with other person's things, personal construction materials for just private people. So that was my biggest problem. I just would not let that happen. And it was a bone of contention. So as soon as I was leaving, the person who replaced me, I was really sad, but I said, you make that decision, and they decided that they were going to let that happen, so mm-hmm. you can't win them all. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so that was a stressor. It was definitely a stressor. But I'll tell you, that was 1% of the great experience that I had.
Mm-hmm. Super. Yeah. Well, what are you most proud of?
Oh, that we got these projects done. I mean, these projects would not have happened, and people were paid. It really, really worked. We also had food distribution. You know, that was part of my, on the trucks, we'd load up a lot of food because there was just absolutely nothing to eat. People were eating bark off trees and things like that. So it was bad. This was the time during apartheid, and South Africa is the neighboring country to the south. And the counselor, which is an elected position, he got this fax. At the time, it was only faxes, so that said that there were, you know, people, the government of South Africa had heard that people are eating the bark off of trees, and would you like assistance? That, at that time, was really an embarrassment for for Botswana, because they were adversaries, right? They would never take help from South Africa. They didn't want that. So it was embarrassing. So we had to go to this village. We had to, like, a 14-hour drive straight away and figure out what they were doing. But it turned out that they did not have food, but they were eating the bark. But it's something that was in their cultural thing. That's what they did, the Bushmen people. So we gave them, you know, rice and donor bags and food and things like that. So that was the biggest, that was like a big challenge. That was a big, big problem that we had.
Were you ever sick while you were over there?
No.
So you never had problems with
malaria? No. It Good. Wasn't a place. I had to stop taking the Claroquine. I just did not. I was hallucinating. I took it for 3 days. They wanted us to take that. I just never took it. I don't even know if they still have that. I was in an area where there was tsetse fly. No, I never really got sick. I got, you know, when I was traveling home, I got sick. But not that
well. How often did you see other Peace Corps volunteers?
I lived with, I had a place where I was given a big house. And I invited other Peace Corps volunteers who weren't in a good living conditions to live with me. Yeah.
So Peace Corps at that time didn't provide you housing?
No. It was a government house. It was an old colonial house. It was just this cement square. It was big. It had like 3-4 bedrooms, a ranch. Of course, all just concrete. Everything was concrete. It had a wood-burning stove. There was no electricity. And a rain, a water collection thing, but we did have running water.
So you had indoor plumbing.
Yes, for that house. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Vacations? Did you
no
take?
No hot water though.
All heated on the stove.
Yeah, we were able to heat the water. There was some sort of hot water heater, then it transferred to the shower. You know, something like that. You couldn't take a warm shower, but you had to take 2 hours to make a fire and get the water hot.
Did you take vacations while you were there?
Yes. We took we went to a safari, and we flew in an airplane, just like a little tiny airplane, which was a few miles into the bush, and that was fun. Just, we went on these canoes, and it was just wonderful, just being on the ground, and then you sleep and you hear the lions at night. It was just wonderful. And then, you know, a couple of times, Zimbabwe is a beautiful country. Zimbabwe, we'd always go to, you know, it was right next to Zimbabwe, so we went there a lot of times. Yeah. I went there. So one time we went to Chimanimani National Park, which borders Mozambique, and that was when there was a big civil war going on in Mozambique. You could hear, you know, the shock, you know, the blasting of the guns, and pretty wild. And in that same place where we slept, in a tent on the lawn of a hotel, and they would give you tea service in the morning. So some guy would come out with, like, all dressed up to your tent with, like, tea and, you know, biscuits or whatever. It was really, really pretty funny.
Did you go home at all during that time?
I did. My mother developed leukemia, so she was sort of, it was touch and go whether she was going to pass away. And it was only about 6 months into my stay there where the Peace Corps flew me home. I stayed for 3 weeks and then I flew back. And she survived. She survived, so it was good. But it was really great to do that. I didn't, you know, it wasn't a great thing to go home, but I had to do that.
How did you keep up communication while you were in Botswana with people at home?
Letters. There was no, in the capital, there was a way to call, and I did one Christmas. That's what I did one time.
What would be the turnaround? Like if you sent a letter and they'd send one back?
Oh, probably 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you can't even think of that now, right? I mean, I can't believe the Peace Corps volunteers have, like, Facebook and all this communication, and it's not the same experience. It's not, you know, I can't imagine it being the same, but it's fine.
What did it feel like when you knew your time to leave was coming up?
They wanted me to stay another year. They really wanted me to, but I didn't want, it was time to move on. It was terrible. I mean, but you had to sort of break with that, right? You had to come home. I had so much fun and a great experience. It's great to be at the age that I was doing what I did. Absolutely the greatest years of my life. No question about it. And you just can't live. It's time. You know, you have to know when to change that. So,
have you been back at all?
I want to. No. I really like to go back. I'd love to take my family back because the cultural immersion is amazing. And now, the thing is, though, I've been looking on, it's completely different, it's completely developed. And we just had, it was really rough living. It's really developed. Botswana is a pretty rich country because they discovered diamonds. So they put tarmac down, and then the Maung, it's become like a tourist hub. So I know it wouldn't be, it would cost us $10,000 to bring the family of five. So I have places I could stay, but it's not going to, it wouldn't be, I don't know if it would be the same experience that I had. So I just don't know if I want to do that,
because of that. Have you kept in touch with people?
I do. As a matter of fact, right now, some of the locals, one person started a rape center, and she's asking me for a laptop. So I've been trying to work with United Healthcare, who I work with, to get me that laptop. It's taken them a long time, but hopefully we'll get them the laptop they want. It's pretty. So she sent me the NGO information. It's like an official organization. So she sent me all the flyers. And it's pretty great. So what they do is they take parents who have died of AIDS. They take the kids in and shelter them. And I don't know where they go after that, but. And then rape the victims, sort of like a place for, you know, a woman's shelter sort of thing.
Have you had more interactions with Botswana? Have you sort of had this history of sending things over or helping people over there?
No. It's because of Facebook that they contacted me. They found me. The messenger. So we have been able to communicate. As a matter of fact, I did a FaceTime with someone, which blew me away. I was able to FaceTime someone, and the person who I'm talking about, we were able to communicate. It's just fantastic. So I guess it's like Skype, but I just never thought of it, and then it was just amazing for it to happen. So I woke her up at 2 in the morning because it's the time difference. Who would know? I didn't think of it, you know. So.
How has your experience in Peace Corps impacted the rest of your life?
So, as I said, it was great, best years of my life. It completely changed the trajectory of my life. And the things I had a really hard time adjusting when I came back. So, I mean, when I say a hard time, it's just a month, you know, maybe. I've lived, you know, a different life because of it. So, you guys know that, right? It's different. The thing is, it could be lonely at times because you don't know, nobody really knows what you you dated, what you lived, and you know, who's for you to say it? You're, you know, everybody gets to live their life, but I want them to, I just want them to know that this isn't the greatest, this isn't the best life that you can possibly have. There's just too many conveniences or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Did it change what you were going to do as far as a vocation for your life?
Yes, absolutely. So, because of the food distribution, I got into healthcare, and I did a lot with working with the clinics there, as part of my job. So I wanted to get into public health when I came back. So I went to got my master's in public health. Yeah, and I wanted to be a health officer, you know, county health officer. But that didn't work out. I didn't like the public sector. It just was not. It was too slow for me. So I ended up doing epidemiology at Unity Healthcare, like looking at, you know, preventive care and things like that through data. That's what it is.
How has it affected your parenting or your relationship with your family, do you think?
I think so, very greatly. I try to shine that light on my kids that there's, you know, a different way. There's a, you're really lucky to have all these conveniences, but try to impart on them just to, you know, be humble, and you're blessed with all these things, but, you know, it can be taken away like a snap of a finger. So you really have to be well versed in living, and you have to just be able to, you know, live with very little means, because you don't know what the future of your life is going to be, or the future of this country. So I try to part. I mean, if I'm, is it working? I'm not sure, but we'll see. Yeah. So that's that.
Is there one particular adventure you remember that stands out for you in your Peace Corps time?
No, not really, because it was just, you know, when I say fantastic experience, it was a fantastic experience. I can tell you this story. So I did work with the Basar, the Bushmen, and I mean, these people live, if I showed you the pictures, you know, just in these grass huts that are about this high, they just live, you know, really, really primitive living. They had rice, like those donor bags, those 50-pound bags of mealy meal, we called it, and sorghum that were, you know, donated from different countries, and we would give it to them. And then I would go back to the village, and they'd be wearing them. Like, the woman would be wearing these, like, nylon bags. That's how. And so, you know, if you know about the Bushmen, they're hunter-gatherers. They would go out into the bush for 3 weeks, and they would, you know, shoot the poison arrows and, you know, get a giraffe and then just bring it, you know, I don't know what they do from there, but they invited me to go and hunt with them. And I, you know, sincerely, like, I am not worthy to be in your presence. Like, I am not worthy to be, you know, in your foot. I'm not allowed to do this because I don't feel like, you know, I deserve your being with you. You know, I don't know how I'm articulating that, but I'm trying to convey that I just felt lower than that. Like, I didn't deserve this great experience. So, you know, I turned that down. That was probably, I don't know if that was answered your question, but that was pretty intense, I think. That's something I remember. It was an honor for them to ask me, and I didn't feel like I was really worthy of this, you know, beautiful thing that they do, like, you know, being with them for, you know, several days just out in the bush, and, you know, whether or not I can keep up either, so I don't know, but that was what I felt at the time, that I didn't deserve to to go out with them, you know.
Is there anything else that you feel like you would like to tell us about your experience in Peace Corps?
So, I think I think I probably have a different perspective because of the project that I was in. So I feel that, you know, especially in this political, like, everything's so political, this political culture we're in, everything's so heated. And I believe that what I experience is that hard work is the way. Hard work, you know, hard work. I've seen it. These people did not want to take anything from like no handouts. They have to feel like they worked. They didn't like the handouts. So and what it gave them is this great freedom. Like it gave them it just. They felt noble enough to. They felt good about themselves. And so I do have probably a different perspective on what I would probably say that you know most RCPV you know or PCVs are left leaning or left. I do not. I'm probably completely because I feel that what I saw. Definitely is in my heart that I think it's just better off to have people have a better experience in life than just, you know, try to help out people as much as possible. I think it kills people in the end. I live that, so it's in me, and that's what I have to, that's what I brought home. A completely different experience, probably than 99% of the Peace Corps volunteers.
And it sounds like you were very humbled by your experience.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't, probably like you, I would love to live, you know, just like in Vermont somewhere, in the woods somewhere like that, yeah. And you don't need anything, right? So, yeah. We have three adopted kids. That was like sort of what we did. And you have to, you know, you have to make money, right? You have to.
Mm-hmm.
So we're giving the best that we could.
Mm-hmm. Have you been active at all since you've gotten back in post-Peace Corps activities?
No. Mm-mm. Too busy. Right. I just went to the parade. And that was about it. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Ken.
Yeah.